Was it a Reichstag fire?
Hello?
Was it a new Pearl Harbor? That's a question that David Ray Griffin asked in his seminal 9/11 truth book, The New Pearl Harbor. That was the book that woke me up, even before it was published, because I heard that Dr. Griffin was writing it, and I had a lot of respect for him, and so I said, well, if he's writing a book looking at the evidence that the towers were blown up, that the Pentagon was hit by something other than a hijacked passenger jet, I'd better check it out. So I did, and a couple of months before his book came out, I was already well-versed on the fact that 9/11 was an obvious inside job. Well, shortly after that, I discovered another great book. It's called Reality, Truth, and Evil by Thomas Meyer, a Swiss, a Swiss intellectual. And it's a terrific book. It amplifies the Pearl Harbor comparison that Griffin put together in, I think it's the first chapter of his book, and points out that there is abundant evidence that 9/11 was consciously crafted and modeled after the success of Pearl Harbor. Wolfowitz had a lifelong and still has a lifelong obsession with the quote from Albert Speer to the effect that if the Nazis had been blessed with a Pearl Harbor attack on themselves, they would have won World War II. Rallying the population behind war is of immense strategic significance, and people responsible for wars apparently are willing to do just about anything to gain that big strategic edge, even murder thousands of their own countrymen. Well, it's horrible. And T.H. Meyer, or Thomas Meyer, is one of the few people who really have gotten to the deepest level of why it's so horrible. He cites Rudolf Steiner, I believe, as saying that every lie is a murder at the level of the soul. And a lie as big as 9/11 is the equivalent of the murder of the whole population, pretty much, because the entire population of Earth was powerfully affected by these horrific images. More than half the population of the U.S. suffered from clinical post-traumatic stress disorder, as we've heard from Martha Gallup in her research. So what can I say? Thomas Meyer's book, Reality, Truth, and Evil, is absolutely essential reading, and it's a great honor and pleasure to welcome him back to the show. So, hey, welcome, Thomas Meyer. How are you?
Welcome, Kevin.
Yes.
Nice to have an occasion. Yes. Are we having a conversation? You ask me questions, or is it, how are we working?
Well, whatever you'd like.
Well.
You want some questions?
I have also some questions for you, of course.
All right, you're welcome to grill me if you want.
Great. First, I was very happy, of course, to see that you got into the core of my little attempt, because the dimension of Pearl Harbor, as you mentioned, is far wider than most people realize. And I personally happened to know the story long before 9/11, you know. There is a BBC movie on Pearl Harbor, Bait for the War, I think it was called, in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So I was well prepared, and when I heard that that continuous comparison stated by Bush, and I started thinking immediately, that's interesting. That is, in a way, the key given away to those who knew the true Pearl Harbor story. So I went back to study a little bit the destiny and life of Kimmel, you know, Admiral Kimmel.
Yes.
And even an American politician that I was interested to hear thought that's the American case Dreyfus, you know. Mm-hmm. That was the French officer who was allegedly punished and put into prison, and he was later liberated by the force of intellectuals. There was still a force of intellectuals in Europe at that time, by Emile Zola and others. And so Kimmel's story is extremely interesting. I happened to get his book, and you could see, you know, he was really the scapegoat for the whole thing.
He certainly was. Yeah.
And he was a totally morally a fine person, and at the end of his book he said he can still not believe that his administration was able to do this.
Right.
And,
you know, I had his, I think his grandson on my show last year on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th. I had Thomas Kimmel on. He was
Right.
Admiral husband Edward Kimmel's great, or his grandson, I believe, and he talked about how his grandfather had been set up to take
the blame. Right. Yes, and is he in the 9/11 movement active?
Yes. Well, he actually, you know, we talked a little bit about it, but he's mostly focused on his effort to clear the name of his grandfather.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see. And then, of course, I read with great joy you really interesting, inspired book. I found it also quite funny and remarkable for the humor in it. I mean, in such a serious situation, it's also healthy to have some humor, I think.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think we need that. You know, I think that the purpose of something like 9/11 is to psychologically condition people and make them fearful and divide people apart from each other. And humor has a kind of a bringing together effect.
Absolutely.
Merging of opposites. And so it's a kind of a good antidote.
And I must say, also, we have here in Switzerland a little a movement now going on. Even there's a website with some officials, politicians, and people. I don't know whether you have ever heard of, of course you have heard of Daniele Ganser. You have talked to him lately.
Yes, actually, Daniel Ganser was had emailed me and said that it was about time I should bring you back on the show.
Yes, okay, that's nice. Was I ever on your show, Kevin?
Yes, you were. I had you on. It must have been at least 3 years ago, though. You know, I've been doing this now for so long. It's
really? That must have been. I don't know what happened to me, but that must have been very short. Anyway, I'm very, very happy to be back, and I mentioned Daniele because he's one. The few academics who had dared to address the subject, you know, he was very prudent by saying there is the Lehop or the Mehop or, I don't know, the third version, let it happen on purpose, or it was a surprise, or it was an inside job. And this cost his academic career. You know that.
Who are you referring to?
I'm talking about Daniele Ganser.
Oh yes, Daniel Ganser. Well, he as I understand it, he had put on and did a talk recently this past year that got a lot of heat came on him, but it hasn't actually caused him to lose his job, has it?
No, he hasn't lost his job, but I mean, I kind of think say that really he has tried to make a habilitation, as we call it here.
Right,
and that was blown off, and so he has now founded a little company, and his chances of going on in the academic world are very minute.
That's so crazy, because his work on Operation Gladio is absolutely crucial, and I don't think anybody has really contested it.
Right, that's it, and I think I talked to him lately. I think what is needed among the 9/11 people is that they got knowledge of each other and cut out any kind of, you know, personal ambition and things like that. And then they can form a kind of a group getting stronger, because in the academic world, I think, and you know it from your own experience, you're just being ousted somehow in a way.
Right. And since it's usually the best people who have the confidence and the courage to speak up about these matters, seems to me if we ever started a university or found a university that would create, let's say, a false flag studies program and hire people like Professor Ganser and others who have spoken out on these issues. And the place to go would obviously the Arab and Muslim, well, the Muslim world really ought to sponsor such a university, because the Muslims have been demonized by 9/11.
Absolutely. Do you think that Jerry Maystar has helped to de-demonized, so to speak, because his books have been translated into Arab languages, I think. Jerry Maison, you know the fellow.
Yes, Jerry Maison, he's the author of Le Feuilles en Posture, the Big Lie, as well as another 9/11 book, Pentagate, I think it was. He was one of the early 9/11 truth voices, and he had tremendous success. His first book, The Big Lie, sold more copies upon publication than any other book in French publishing history.
Yeah, exactly.
But so of course, he was attacked by the usual suspects.
Oh, yes, of course. Does he have an impact? Do you know people in Arab countries who have read his books in Arabic?
Absolutely. That's right.
That's good news.
You know, I remember before I really had awakened to 9/11 truth, I saw Terry Mason debating a Pentagon spokesperson on Al Jazeera. It was on the show Alethij El Muakis, which is their flagship show. And Terry Mason just demolished this Pentagon flack, demolished him. And the poll showed that at the beginning, the poll was running 60-40 in favor of 9/11 was an inside job. By the end of the show, it was almost 90-10, and 90% of the viewers were saying that 9/11 was an inside job.
Good result. Same, I think, Richard Gage is counting the numbers of people who think it was the truth, the whole myth, and at the end of his lecture there's also about 5% left, I think. Richard Gage, are you in connection with him?
Oh, yes, yeah. We brought Richard to Madison, Wisconsin here last spring, and so I got to spend some time with Richard. We had a very successful event. We packed a big room on campus. It was like a 300-seat room, and we practically filled it, so it was a huge success. And, wherever Richard goes, he finds, you know, most of the people that come because they know that he's right already, but there are always a handful who don't, and he usually succeeds in convincing most of them that indeed these collapses were obviously controlled demolition.
I think he is extremely skilled in his procedure, that he just goes to the basic technical things that everyone can see. I think that's a good thing to do, in a way, to start with.
Absolutely.
Have you been involved in any official 9/11 events now this year, 10 years back?
I've been involved in all sorts of 9/11 events. I have a sort of 9/11 truth resume published at my website, truthjihad.com, but it needs to be updated. This semester, actually, or this year here in Madison, I've been working as the advisor to a student organization at the university called the Sifting and Winnowing Club. It's a free speech group, and they took their name, Sifting and Winnowing, from the university's motto. The university's own motto is that no matter what are the limitations that trammel inquiry elsewhere, here at the great University of Wisconsin, we will always support that fearless sifting and winnowing by which the truth can be found. And their own motto is a radical free speech, free inquiry motto, and yet they're not living up to it. I was chased out of the university just because I was talking about 9/11 in public. So we have a free speech club now, the Sifting and Winnowing Club, and we're sponsoring events including Richard Gage last year. This year we had a 9/11 event on the anniversary, and we also have had events around the assassinations of the pro-peace, pro-9/11 truth Senator Paul Wellstone, who was killed in a plane crash to prevent him from stopping the Iraq war before it started and to prevent him from getting a 9/11 investigation. And now we're doing another event on the JFK assassination this November 22nd at the University of Wisconsin. Jim Fetzer will be discussing it. So I'm active in the academic freedom area here in Wisconsin. And I think other people should do this. Go to your local university, start a student club, and have these kinds of events.
Right. I mean, we have also here a few things, and I don't know whether you know that I have also run a publishing company, Percy's Publications, and you find on our website www.percy's, you know, the Greek hero, .ch. You find also interviews that we made right from the start on October 2001. We started. There was no wavering here. It was clearly from the beginning that this is a foul story from A to Z.
Now, how did you understand that so quickly?
As I tried to hint maybe unclearly in the beginning, as I knew the Pearl Harbor story, the true one, not the myth, you know, and I had studied these great historians like Charles Byrd, and what was his name, another name, was Harry Elmer Barnes, classics, wonderful literature. Or I have read the FDR, The Other Side of the Coin, by Hamilton Fish, who was actually announcing Roosevelt's lie masterpiece speech on December the 8th, which is, I think, something everybody in school should study. It's a great thing. You think you're on a Shakespeare play, and you hear Jago, you know, from Othello, you know, the intrigue character. And I knew the story, so when I heard that they compared that, I thought, is that possible to ignore all this academic knowledge on the true story of Pearl Harbor, and I found, yes, they're there, because the myth has been swallowed. The myth has gone through history books and schools, so people still believe in the wrong thing. But, you know, it was interesting because even in the commission, they used the comparison all the time. And as I read in the wrote in the book, also Rumsfeld went around with that wrong myth book about Pearl Harbor by Roberta Wallstetter, you know?
Yes, yes. And of
but
course, she
I
was,
think...
Yeah, she was really Albert Wolfstetter's wife, and
exactly.
Albert Wolfstetter was Paul Wolfowitz's mentor.
That was, of course, a myth story, and it is evident that one thought, well, the myth about Pearl Harbor has been so solidly thrown into people's souls that we can use the comparison, and nobody will find anything wrong about it. And you had the same emotional effect in America. That was I think it was a negative masterpiece, you know.
Absolutely.
And, They were a bit, I think, I observed the Pearl Harbor comparison vanished a little bit into the background because Stinnett's book that came out, I think, you probably know better, in about 2000, Day of Disease.
Right.
Ruth, that had, of course, a kind of a sobering effect. I think some people thought, well, we shouldn't go too far on with that comparison because now people can read the other side of the story and they might ask, well, if that was a whole deceit, the official story of Pearl Harbor, maybe it's about the same thing with 9/11. So,
right. Well, I think Stinnett's book had something to do with it, but I think it was David Ray Griffin's book, The New Pearl Harbor, that really put the nail in the proverbial coffin of the people
okay.
who were calling 9/11 the New Pearl Harbor and thinking that that was a compliment. we'll be back in a moment. I'm Kevin Barrett talking with Thomas Meyer. He's an author, publisher from Switzerland, author of a number of great books, including the great New Pearl Harbor book. Welcome back. This is Truth Jihad Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Barrett, talking with Thomas Meyer. He's the author of Reality, Truth, and Evil, a very important 9/11 truth book that is not as widely known in this country as it should be. Well, Thomas, you were talking about how you caught on to 9/11 very quickly due to all of the Pearl Harbor comparisons that were being thrown
right.
out early on, and you knowing the true story of Pearl Harbor immediately got the idea. And in your book, you point out that this is this kind of lying, this doublespeak, in which they tell one story to the masses and another story to each other, and all the while believing that the elite has the right to lie like this for the supposedly for the general good, which is of course the way these people view the Pearl Harbor big lie. But ultimately, even if the Nazis were evil and it was better to go to war and so on, whether or not that's true,
that's no justification for the lie, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, that's why it's also important. We published also books that show the liberation of the Nazis, that one can say in Europe, thanks to America. That's very fine. But the other coin of, or the other side of the metal is all the corporations and the business things going on with pre-Nazi and Nazi Germany. You could even say, you know, we published a little book or a book by Preparata, Conjuring Hitler, how England and America made, he calls it, the Third Reich, with all the financial backing up, which actually shows that Hitler wouldn't have been able to do what he did out without the Western financial aid. So that's the other side of the coin, that these transactions and business going on is what is not in the public consciousness so far. So
right.
That these people who are behind the 9/11 are in the same stream than those who backed Hitler Germany, and this is not the official truth. The official truth is we come as the great liberators to Europe, and that's why we have to go into war, and that's why Pearl Harbor was necessary, etc., etc. But the whole structure of the, I keep saying the politics of the American administration, and not of the people, of course. You know, privately, I'm a great admirer of Emerson and other minds. But the official policy needs lie like economy needs oil.
And
that's their element. That's their element.
Yes. Well, you know, I think the reason they need these lies concerning war, the reason that they need lies about the evil enemy is because here in the USA, you know, we've been conquering more and more territory and more resources, and human nature is not aggressive. Human nature is willing to fight in order to defend what we already have.
Exactly.
But human nature does not want to go out and fight somebody to steal their resources and be aggressive. Aggression is bad. And so they have to lie to us to make us feel like we're under attack by the evil enemy.
Exactly. And that makes it all the worse. That I think that's more the psychic or spiritual part of the question. All these lies have a kind of an effect on people's consciousness. It is dimmed down, it is paralyzed, and many people don't even think they should find out what the truth is. That's an effect of lies, because lies are not only murders, as you referred earlier, but they're also like chloroformic means of keep people's consciousness down. And I think that's what we can observe today. For example, I don't know how it is in America, you tell me. Iran now on the program. And the whole thing that has been said about Iraq based on all these lies and contractions is now being repeated. And the press and the media seem to swallow it, totally forgetful of what has been cleared up about it already. So why is that possible?
I think it has
to do with a kind of a mental, with a pollution of an air pollution, a soul or a spiritual air pollution of the spiritual atmosphere, which should also be considered not less important than the climate, you know, all the talk about the air pollution, which is, of course, in a way justified. But this pollution through lies of people's consciousness has to be raised into consciousness as a factor. Why it is so hard to get people to look at the fact? What is your thought about that?
I think you're absolutely right, and that's one of the brilliant things about your book is really getting to that point that lies have this kind of baleful and, you know, malefic influence on the whole structure of society. That when people are lied to so much that they reach the point of throwing up their hands and saying, "Oh, we'll never really know," and then just buying into whatever kind of mythology is out there,
exactly.
Then I think it takes away people's power, and it disempowers people.
Exactly. That's why, and I think there's a good American tradition. There are new lectures by Emerson, which we start to edit in German here, in which they have actually been found only about 10 years ago, Harvard lectures that were never published. And in one of the essays, he says, to every physical law, there is a spiritual equivalent. And he says, to the physical law of gravity, the spiritual equivalent is truth. Everything in the end gravitates to truth. I found this a marvelous statement, and I feel that's one of the deeper elements of the good side of the American mission, if one can say so. And I feel that the 9/11 truth seekers, many, like you, for example, and I might include myself even as a European, they are actually following this, that in the end everything will come to truth, so don't be afraid of it.
I think you're right. I think here in the U.S., the culture is very much built on truth in certain ways. The Native Americans have been well known as people who tend to not, you know, be more rooted in truth than the Europeans who came here. And I think the European culture took some of that from the Native American culture. And so on one level, Americans, I think, are more rooted in truth, in a sense, than even the European culture.
Maybe,
But I think that at the same time, that has left Americans open to manipulation by the confidence men, as Melville put it in his book, The Confidence Man, that there's another side of this American character, the psychopaths who go around taking advantage of people's naivete and people's sort of belief in truth to rob them blind.
Oh, yes. But the truth seeking and belief in truth are, for me, of course, and for you as a priest as well, different matters. the truth seeking is what is necessary, isn't it? And but today, you know, and you mentioned that in your review, as I've started Steiner, one of the things that I've never forgot, he says already in 1920, is that the main basic feature of public life is mendacity today. And if that's a statement you find in 1920, and I think it's absolutely true, and if we know that, we can understand it needs independence and courage and truth-seeking. And I think it's like a hygienic act. If these people, like you and many others, will not be there, the pollution of our minds and souls would be much worse because, I mean, what is at stake is, in a way, the destiny of the whole globe. If we go into Iran and all these sleeping Europeans also, you know, the Germans might be involved, and I don't know, with Switzerland it's a bit more difficult. I'm Swiss, you know, and we're a little bit spared, so to speak, but not for a long time, I feel. So that truth-seeking is cannot be overestimated, and that's why I was so happy also to see your contribution, among others, and hope that we'll go on. Now I have a little question to you, Kevin.
Okay.
How many people do you think are required in America to build a kind of a critical mass so that they have to be taken seriously, a new investigation of the whole crime?
That's a very good question. I'm not really sure. I think it could, the critical mass that you need for any particular thing to get done depends on a lot of things, like who are those people? If we could probably have, if the right, 0.05% of the population decided that they were going to get a real 9/11 investigation one way or another and actually committed to it, we might be able to get it. And if the wrong 50% just kind of supported it but didn't do anything, we wouldn't get it. So
okay.
It's a combination of the right people with the intensity of motivation, the means to get it done, and the commitment to getting it done. And given all of that, I don't think we're too far from the potential tipping point. There are a number of
right.
efforts going on. There's Occupy Building 7 in New York. It's coming out of the Building 7 movement in New York City.
Yeah.
That I think has a lot of potential to sort of merge 9/11 truth with the Occupy movement. And we have these little miniature breakthroughs in the mainstream media happening periodically where people like Geraldo Rivera and Judge Napolitano on
right.
Fox TV, of all places, start
right.
joining the 9/11 truth movement. And so it's hard to say, when the moment of truth, as it were, might finally arrive.
I mean, at any rate, I think it is important that the work is done, at any rate, for the pollution, for the clearing of this pollution in the psychic, in the mental atmosphere around the globe. So I wouldn't measure it, by a kind of a success, but of course it would have to be hoped that it makes such an impact that you have more criminal tribunals with the American presidents of the last 20 years or so, and a lot of people in the administration.
Right, and it needs to be something like the South African Truth and Reconciliation
exactly.
Commission, only on a much larger scale, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, that's to be hoped for. What do you think have you actually... No, my other question is more important. The Wall Street movement now in America, are there people who are also in the 9/11 truth movement, or is this a totally different stream?
I think many of them are. The
yeah.
polls show that about one-third of Americans are with the 9/11 truth movement, whether actively or passively. And in New York, it's a little higher than that. Of course, they're all scared. So if you look at the Occupy Wall Street people, I would guess that the percentage of them who were actively or passively pro 9/11 truth would be a little higher than that.
Uh-huh.
Now, the thing is that so many people don't want to say, to make it part of what they're doing, because they say, well, I'm doing Occupy Wall Street and I want to focus on that, or I'm
yeah.
doing this important project, and if I throw 9/11 truth into the mix, then it's going to mess up my reputation and I won't be able to do my project as well. There's
yeah,
so many
yeah.
people out there like that. And so that's an obstacle we need to get over, including in the Occupy movement. And the other side is propagandizing the Occupy movement, saying, you guys had better separate yourselves from those crazy truthers or else we'll make you look like a bunch of idiots.
Okay. Yeah, okay. One has tried that with you as well, I suppose, and everyone exposing himself in the public to make you look paranoid and whatever, you know.
Right. Well, I was dragged in front of the cameras at Fox News and elsewhere as part of an effort to shoot down 9/11 Truth by launching an ad hominem attack against some of its leading faces. And I think that effort, which is still ongoing, is, you know, Jonathan Kay's book, Among the Truthers, that came out this year, is just the latest effort to, you know, put together this...
discredit the whole
right,
movement.
Throw mud at us to, you know... Richard Gage says what he says because he's having a midlife crisis. Kevin Barrett is an anti-Semite, you know.
Who financed
David Griffin is a crank. This kind
who
of...
financed him, Kevin?
Well, Jonathan Kay is working with the National Post in Canada, which is a paper that has a long history of kind of neoconservatism. He was a member of FUD, Elmer FUD, I call it, the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, which is the new version of PNAC, the Project for a New American Century, that called for a new Pearl Harbor 1 year before 9/11 and got it. So they changed their name to FUD, and Jonathan Kay was a fellow there at the time that he started working on his book. So to me, it looks highly
suspicious. What does FUD mean? Excuse me, I didn't get that. What does FUD mean?
Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, I think it is.
I think
I got that name right. It's basically PNAC, Project for a New American Century, changed its name, but it was almost the same people. And,
it sounds better. It sounds more appealing, doesn't it?
I guess so, yeah. do you think that these people actually believe that they're defending a democracy? They might believe that, well, we elite people who can...
No. I don't believe it.
You don't think they even trick-fool
themselves?
I don't
believe it.
Okay.
I mean, there are, in a way, I mean, we see now in Europe, we have new people in Italy and in Greece, and they have, interesting enough, both trilateral relations, you know. This is money. This is world banking, elitist thinking. And so, of course, they don't believe in this nonsense, but I think they can sell it to some naive people who think that's a good thing to do.
Right. Well, they're trying to scare us into believing there's a terrible threat, you know, whether it was, you know, the last war against the Nazis or the communists or the Muslims or what have you.
Oh, I have to tell you something. As you have converted to Islam, you might find it funny.
Okay, hello? You better save it till after the break because we are going into a commercial break. I'm Kevin Barrett talking with T.H. Meyer. He's a Swiss author and publisher. His book, Reality, Truth, and Evil, is an absolute must for any 9/11 truth seeker. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Truth Jihad Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Barrett, talking right now to Thomas Meyer, author of Reality, Truth, and Evil, which is a terrific book with a lot of spiritual insight into the issue of 9/11 truth. We get so many books that are purely about the details and the logistics of how the bad guys did it and how we know they did it and things like that. But here's one that gets below the surface level to the questions of meaning that are really at the heart of this issue. Well, so Thomas, you were just about to ask me something about Islam.
I was actually trying to tell you an anecdote with some comical core, if you're interested.
Okay, go right ahead.
A paradox, you know, the whole idiotic security measures that we're all suffering from when traveling, I mean, especially internationally. I don't know how it is in the United States. I had a conversation in London with someone on the airport where you had to queue up for, I don't know, half an hour. And I asked the gentleman, how do you think, sir, will we travel in 10 years? And he said, I think we will all have to travel naked, sir. You know, and the second thing is, at the same airport, I remarked, you know, isn't it irony that the whole world is made to believe in the bad side of Islamic fundamentalism, but at the airport you have to get off out of your shoes as if you would go into a mosque.
So the airports are now sacred temples of fear.
Yeah, the airport are actually turning everyone into you. I think it's just it's just it belongs to the ridiculous part of the site, how we are all being treated like little children, etc. This is that. I wanted to ask add that to you because you are
right. Well, you know, Jesse Ventura is very, very upset about this whole issue because he has some kind of a stainless steel implant or something, and so he sets off the metal detectors everywhere, and they always have to give him an enhanced pat-down. And he's tired of being groped every time he travels, so he sued them, and he planned to get a jury trial, which he would easily have been able to win. And, of course, the corrupt federal judges here denied him his jury trial. So he's just very upset. He's basically on the point of renouncing any affiliation with the
USA. Who's the gentleman? I didn't get the name, Kevin. Who's the name?
Yeah, Jesse Ventura. He's the former governor
of Minnesota. I know him. Yeah.
Yes.
He has made an interesting venue also to find out things about ARP, you know, in Alaska. You know that probably.
That's right, yeah. His TV show, Conspiracy Theory, is
right.
One of the very best things out there that's reaching a lot of people.
Yeah. I saw it on RT in quite a remarkable Russian Moscow station, you know, probably, RT.
Yes, I've been interviewed on Russia Today quite a few times.
Oh, you have given an interview there. I've seen that, exactly.
Yes.
Now, the back to the serious thing, what is so sad is how few people here in Europe are really interested to get to the core of the matter, to be so thorough, and not to discredit those who do a lot of good work, like you and many others. And how can you handle this? I mean, how can you manage?
Yes, I noticed when I was in Europe that even though the polls suggest that 90% or 89% of Germans don't believe the official story of 9/11, still there isn't a whole lot of enthusiasm for going out and demanding the truth.
Right.
Whereas in Turkey, I was in Turkey last spring, there I found a lot of awareness as well as enthusiasm for the truth. So I wonder why Europeans have lost this aspect of European culture, going back to Socrates and Plato, that puts truth up at the highest level of value, just like in Islam,
right.
You know, God's names is Al-Haq, meaning the truth or reality.
Right.
And how can European culture survive if it loses interest in truth?
And also other I'm a great admirer of Nizami, you know, the Persian poet.
Yes.
Nizami.
Yeah, the Persians have all the best poets, it seems like.
Great, wonderful. And the appreciation for truth is paramount. Now, if the appreciation for truth gets to the side, I think we are in a very bad situation, and that's what we have. I think these people who are behind 9/11 or the international banking crisis profit from the going down of whole countries like Greece, they have, in a way, a remarkable illusion. I think their illusion is, if you are powerful enough, truth does not matter.
Right. Well, I think that's what Karl Rove said when he was interviewed by The New Yorker. And he said something like, you people are off in the reality-based community, but we're the people who are making history now. And, you know, we're going to create these, you know, illusions. And by the time you start to even try to figure out what we're up to, we will have created a whole new illusion. You know, so I'm not getting the quote exactly right, but I'm sure you've heard that quote. He's making fun of people in the reality-based community.
Right. Who is that man?
Well, it was an unknown high-level Bush administration official who was nameless in the article, but I believe the consensus is that it's probably Karl Rove.
Oh, is he the one who wrote the speeches?
Karl Rove was George W. Bush's sort of chief propagandist and political operator.
Right. You know, another remark, maybe, when as a European I looked at Roosevelt's behavior, going back briefly to Pearl Harbor, I must say it's a masterpiece. If you wouldn't know any background, you would believe him. What he talked about, you know, Day of Infamy and all this. Mm-hmm. He was a splendid actor. And George W. Bush, when you saw him in that classroom, I mean, everybody could see.
Well, Bush was a bad liar.
That's very bad acting. Yes. I mean, Roosevelt was marvelous, but it has deteriorated in his acting, but it is so cheap acting that actually many people could see that something is really not right, you know.
Right. Well, Rumsfeld is a strange case. It seems like there's some part of him, like, you know, criminals always want to get caught, supposedly. There's a part of them unconsciously that's trying to get caught. Well, Rumsfeld, you know, like you said, he gave away these Pearl Harbor books for a year before 9/11. And then after 9/11, he's, you know, well, he actually, I believe the day before 9/11, he stood up in front of the Pentagon and basically said something like, you know, we need an all-out attack on this building.
What did he say?
I'm not getting the exact words.
Yeah.
He said something like, we need an all-out attack on the Pentagon or this building. And what he meant was that they needed to totally redo the whole way of doing things in the Pentagon. But his language was, he was basically calling for an attack on the Pentagon on September 10th, 2001.
Right.
This was at the same speech in which he admitted that $2.3 trillion dollars had been lost from the Pentagon budget. These are almost smoking gun admissions. And likewise, after 9/11, he talked about the missile that hit the Pentagon. He talked about Flight 93 being shot down. He keeps, blurting out the truth.
I see. Isn't that a kind of a development in lying in the 20th century to our days? That till maybe the Second World War, people tried to hide their lies, to make a scene. But today you have the impression that some of these people don't even try to hide it. It gets more open and more direct what their intentions are. But still, that doesn't seem to open the eyes of many citizens, which I think it should. From that point of view, maybe the Wall Street movement, or how do you call it in America? The
Occupy movement.
That's right. It's maybe a good sign. The question is, do they have enough? Do they get enough ideas and concrete alternative structuring powers to not be blown away in a few weeks, maybe? I don't know. What do you think about that? Is there a future of this movement?
I would think so. You know, there are all sorts of people who are so suspicious about everything, and I don't blame them, who think that the whole Occupy movement might be controlled or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. It seems to me that they're really going after the right target, and as the economy gets worse, and I'm convinced that it's going to keep getting worse. I think we're on the downslope, and I don't know whether it's peak oil or whether it's an intentional destruction of the economy or what. But and certainly here in the United States, the economy is going down, and for that reason, people are going to be unhappy as their standard of living erodes, as their expectations for a better life for their children are not met, and so. That kind of disaffection and anger and you know, the tendency to have an uprising is going to just keep growing. And I think this Occupy movement is setting the stage very well in pointing at the target. The real target is the financiers. I mean, those are the people that ultimately we have to go after in order to change the way business is conducted.
Exactly. Exactly. One should make also laws that prevent certain people to create money out of money. And the whole, you know, next year, I don't know, we have the 100-year Federal Reserve System, which permits an uncontrolled way of creating money for a few people in power. And this is a very unhealthy thing. Are there alternatives there to stop this?
Well, here in the U.S., the alternative is constitutional currency. The Constitution says that the U.S. Treasury Department is supposed to coin money. So we're living under an unconstitutional regime since 1913.
Exactly. They're not controlled.
And I think that people are waking up across the political spectrum. And Ron Paul, his popularity is coming out of his End the Fed movement. So I think things are moving in a very interesting direction.
Oh, yes, no doubt.
Well, I think we've hit the end of the show. Thank you so much, Thomas Meyer.
Thank you,
great.
Kevin. It was great pleasure. All the best for your important work.
Okay, and all the best to you, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Kevin.
Bye. Thomas Meyer, a.k.a. T.H. Meyer, the author of Reality, Truth, and Evil. Highly recommended 9/11 Truth book. I'm Kevin Barrett. This is Truth Jihad Radio. Back later on in the week with people, including Professor Griff, a public enemy and a minister of information. Go to truthjihadradio.blogspot.com for info. Talk to you soon.